listening to It's All About Food. I am here with, guess who? Gary DeMattei! Woo!
Karen, you look fabulous.
Sitting here in the dark.
We're sitting here in the dark to conserve energy.
And reduce heat, since it's like 90 degrees.
Yes, but there's a lot of energy coming off of you.
Thank you.
And there's a lot of energy coming off of me.
Yes.
We're energizing this program.
Woo!
With power. Vegan power.
Vegan power. We're Woo! Both flexing our muscles now.
Yes.
We're very proud of our baby muscles.
Yes, our baby muscles are being nurtured and really looking great since we decided to shelter in place and improve the art in ourselves. That's that old cliche, you know?
It is?
Yeah. You've heard it, I'm sure, millions of times. Do you like the art in yourself or yourself in the art? And I can honestly say, after these almost 6 months, we really do like the art in ourselves.
Yes.
And so that's what we did when they shut the theaters and stopped all productions here in New York. We just went inside and worked on the art in ourselves.
And put on our own shows in ourselves.
In our bathtub. We did a series of bathtub videos. I don't know if any of you out there are receiving any of these video strings that people are sending now as birthday cards, but we've been getting a lot of requests. And so
to participate,
yeah, we've been doing these videos in our bathtubs.
Yeah, the bathtub is a great place to make little videos
because it has nice acoustics
are great, and if you have a shower curtain, you have this natural instant tiny theater.
Yeah, it's a little tiny proscenium theater. Of course, we are fully clothed. I don't want you to be alarmed. It's not like we are naked in the bath.
No.
For heaven's sakes.
It's just a fun place to film. So if you're creating a string video for someone you care about for their birthday or some other event and you want us to participate, let us know and we'll give you one of our bathtub greetings.
Yes. We should actually do a generic bathtub video birthday for our social media sites.
I think that's a great idea.
Hi, if it's your birthday, and then, break out into song or something.
Something like that. We get a lot of our creative ideas right here during this program. Have you realized that, Gary?
Yeah.
Yeah. You often say, we should, and it happens right here, and we have witnesses.
And we leave it up to the universe to guide us. Another thing I want to talk about today before we get into the bulk of the show is sending a shout out to everyone in my home state of California, especially Northern California where I'm from. They're going through some terrible wildfires there, and I just want to dedicate the show today to all of you folks, friends, family, those of you I know, those of you I don't know, those of you that Karen knows, those of you that Karen does not know, and just know that our hearts, our minds, our thoughts are with you all, and we send you nothing but love, and we hope that this nightmare ends soon. And the rebuilding can start, because I know that Californians are strong people, entrepreneurial people. They are going to rebuild that state, and it's going to be better. And
build back better.
And so just know that we're thinking about you, and my thoughts today are with you as I do this program with the great Karen Hartglass, who I met in Northern California at Stanford University.
That's true. We were doing a musical together. But I have a question for you as a native Californian. Now, I've lived in California off and on over the years, and we've certainly visited a lot in the last decade or more. You've seen fires in California.
I have.
What's different now?
The entire state seems to be on fire. Not only the entire state, but it seems that the entire West Coast might be catching on fire. And the lightning storms.
Dry lightning storms.
Lightning without water afterwards. That's very strange. And it's all about climate change.
It is. Now, we learned a long time ago from Smokey the Bear and other fire experts and experts about forests that fires can be beneficial to forests.
Sure.
They can encourage new growth, and there are benefits to fire, but we're very out of balance at this point.
Right.
and the fires are very dangerous. And not just the fires burning everything in the area where the fire is, but the smoke.
The smoke.
Is covering many states at this point, and right. The air quality is terrible.
I'm not an expert on the atmosphere and what this climate change phenomenon has done to the atmosphere, but I've read as much as I can possibly read. One of the things that can help restore our atmosphere is if we all go plant-based, adopt a vegan lifestyle. And so that's why we're here. And it can help. We know that. The science backs it up.
So part of the problem, of course, is that we're putting a lot more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, carbon dioxide, methane, nitric oxide, and they're raising the temperature of the atmosphere. And it's just 1 or 2 degrees, but it's just that little bit makes everything hotter, drier, and more susceptible in very dry areas to big fires. And we're seeing that now.
We're seeing it, and it's getting more and more difficult to fight these fires, and those brave souls on the front lines doing that work are spread incredibly thin, and now they're having to make the tough decisions. Do we just let this burn and go focus on another fire that is going to wreak more damage if we don't, or, you know, and that's...
It's tough making those decisions. Doctors and medical professionals had to make those decisions early on this year with the coronavirus.
Especially here in New York, which a lot of people are bailing on New York. And it's an interesting concept. A lot of people have really used New York, and New York has
embraced... Used New York over the decades.
Right. Used New York and reaped many benefits from New York and...
For its restaurants, its food, its entertainment, its museums, its theater.
And now they're all getting out.
Yeah, because the party is over right now, temporarily.
Right. They're not making much money by staying in New York. They're going away. It's interesting. It's an interesting concept. I don't know what's going on in their personal lives, but I know it looks rather suspicious that they're not going to stick around for the subsequent rebuilding and renaissance.
Now, I can't predict what's going to happen. No one can. But I believe New York City will come back. I believe in this Build Back Better concept. Progressive Radio Network is here and will be here.
Yes.
We'll be here.
Hallelujah for that. Thank you, Progressive Radio Network, for being here.
Let's move on to some other...
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of great things to talk about.
So let's talk about some of the controversial subjects before we get to the delicious, tasty subjects. I always like to...
Hit them with some news.
Hit them with the news.
And now the news with Karen Hartglass.
Okay, so there's this age-old, boring, tedious question or commentary, and it has to do with protein. The question always is, where do you get your protein? How do you get enough protein? Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, we've been recently hit with those questions once again on social media.
And those questions are there.
Why do they keep asking the same question?
That's a good question. Why do you keep asking? The information's out there. But it's not just protein anymore. I think the masses who have been picking at vegetarians and vegans and people who believe in this healthy whole food thing and are trying to move away from industrial foods and toxins in our foods, etc. That mass who wants things to stay the same or stay in this realm that we've been manipulated to believe in, that we want to eat fast food and restaurant foods and foods, industrial foods, all that stuff. They're coming up with other questions, not just protein, because the answer to protein is out there already.
You can get protein in plants. Every plant has protein.
So. All plants have all the essential amino acids, everybody. Every plant, you can get everything you need from plant foods. Okay, and now we've got all these sexy new plant-based burgers. I just realized that other nutrients are being picked on.
Right.
And are demonized.
Right.
In misleading ways that are wrong.
Exactly. So let us know about a few of those. What are some of these other nutrients that are being demonized?
Exactly. So are people asking you or saying, oh, I can't eat that because it has blah, blah, blah in it? Okay, so one of the popular ones the last few years is lectins. Are lectins. Is lectins are lectins. Not one lectin, but many lectins.
Many lectins.
We're talking about lectins. Dr. Stephen Gundry wrote a book called The Plant Paradox. Dr. T. Colin Campbell and his son, Dr. Tom Campbell. Now, T. Colin Campbell is a nutrition expert, PhD. His son is a medical doctor. And they wrote an excellent commentary, which I share with everyone who asks. And they talked about the book, The Plant Paradox, by Stephen Gundry, who is an MD, and he slams lectins. But if you go to his references, where they're supposed to support what he is saying in the book, and that's what T. Colin Campbell and his son Tom Campbell did in their commentary. They went to those references, they researched the references, and most of them either lead you to nonsense, bunk, made up stuff, misleading stuff. And so a lot of this book is based on
misinformation.
Misinformation.
Well, hey, isn't that the way of the 2000s and especially 2020?
It is.
I mean, from about 2016 to about 2020, it's been all about misinformation, right?
And part of the problem is nobody wants to dig deep. Nobody right. wants to really understand. I know a lot about nutrition. What I do know is when I have a question about it, I know where to go to find the truth. I also think I'm pretty good if I read something and I go to the references and I read those references, I could make a pretty good determination whether the information is valid, misleading, not based on a big enough sample size. There are lots of different things that can determine whether you're going to put a lot of credibility into a study or not.
But these studies that you're talking about now that they trace them back to with respect to this book are just out and out bunk.
Bunk, fluff.
Yeah, and just trying to get people to demonize plant-based lifestyles, which is how it started with, well, you can't do that. You won't get enough protein.
You won't get enough protein.
And you have to eat meat, and you have to kill animals.
And you have to get the right kind of fat. You have to get animal fat. And all of this is nonsense.
Here's the bottom line. No animals need to die for me to live. I stole that from RZA, who is
nice.
A member of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Who are they?
They're an amazing group of artists who play music. The artist that went vegan, RZA, R-Z-A, is also influencing his fellow bandmates. And I think probably 8 of the 10 band members are now vegan. And they're incredible artists, and now they're spreading the word about, especially RZA is spreading the word about veganism. But anyway, what he said really hit home for me, and that is, no animal needs to die for me to live. That's kind of what we're saying here, folks. They're going to try to mislead you. They're going to try to tell you that lectins that are found in certain vegetables are bad for you, and it's all a bunk.
Bunch of bunk.
That's what we're trying to say.
Now, there are many epidemiological studies. There are studies all over the world of people who consume beans and whole grains. And we've got the blue zones where people live the longest and the healthiest. And what are they eating? They're eating a plant, high fiber diet with lots of beans and whole grains. So how is it that these foods can be toxic if the people who are consuming them are living long lives?
Yeah.
And with little or no chronic diseases.
Ironic, because the animals that are consuming those same foods are being slaughtered and fed to humans, and they're not living long lives. Let's move on to why this conversation came up. We are trying to get in as much barbecue time as possible here at Responsible Eating and Living Headquarters, because we don't have a barbecue pit. We have a griddle pan.
Well, we have actually, a terrace, but we're not allowed to cook outdoors.
Right. We're not allowed to cook outdoors. We have a two-sided griddle. One side has the raised grill marks, and the other side is just the flat pancake.
It's a cast iron pan.
Yeah.
Very inexpensive.
So we heat it up when it's 90 degrees outside. We heat it up inside, and we grill a bunch of veggies and tofu, and they're on the website. They're on the Responsible Eating and Living Facebook page. And they'll probably be on this page for the show today. We received some interesting comments from people, and one of them was, about lectins.
What about the lectins?
And that's changed from, well, what about, don't you get enough protein if you eat all those veggies? Aren't you worried you won't get enough protein? Lectins are now being villainized.
So I like to do the math, and I always go to Dr. Furman's website, drfurman.com, and he writes that the number of grams of protein humans need in a day has been estimated at 0.8 grams per kilogram per day, which is about 36 grams of protein per 100 pounds of body weight. Now, let me just digress for a moment and say why in the United States we don't move over to the metric system, because we're talking about 36 grams, which is metric of protein, but we're still talking about 100 pounds of body weight. We should be talking about grams and kilograms of body weight, but I digress. Maybe one day.
Maybe one day.
But anyway, 36 grams of protein per 100 pounds of body weight. Now me, I am under 114 pounds. Some days I'm 112, 113. But let's say 114 pounds. I need 34.2 grams of protein every day. That's nothing.
Right.
That's like next to nothing. 200-pound person needs about 60 grams of protein. It is so easy to get that amount of protein from vegetables. 1 cup of beans gives you about 15 to 20 grams of protein. Bang. Right there.
And now so many people make beans the villain and say, well, I can't eat beans because of the lectins. I can't, you know.
Or maybe they have pain.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing about that.
Here's the thing about pain from beans.
Pain from beans, exactly. So here we are. It's 2020. When did the industrialization of food happen? Sometime early, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, when our foods became more and more processed and less whole, and people started eating more things in boxes rather than getting the produce themselves and preparing simply cooked meals at home. And then in restaurants as well, restaurants cut corners and cut prices, and I'm not knocking them because I know it's really hard to run a restaurant. But as a result of eating restaurant food, people are compromising their digestive abilities.
Well, that depends on where you eat your restaurant food.
Sure.
But yeah, there's a lot of restaurants that are cutting corners, and there's a lot of restaurants that aren't cutting corners, and they're really trying to make food the right way.
But there are ingredients, industrial ingredients, that wreak havoc on our digestive system. Plus, the more conventionally grown foods that are grown with pesticides and herbicides, and I've been screaming lately about the grains and beans that use glyphosate, an ingredient in Roundup Ready herbicide, as a desiccant just before harvest, and this residue has been found in conventional beans and grains, and this wreaks havoc on your digestive system as well. There's all this stuff going on in my digestive system, which makes it more difficult to consume the healthy foods. And when you're not consuming the healthy foods, you don't have the bacteria.
Right. You don't have this good stuff in your gut that goes to work on the beans.
So you put a food that normally humans have been eating since the Paleolithic era. Yes, beans have been found to be consumed back then, folks. Sorry. And we've lost those bacteria that we need to consume them. So when we eat a food that we haven't been eating for a while because we've heard it's healthy, we might have
gas,
bloating, and pain and discomfort.
Right. But it goes away. Trust me. It goes away, so keep eating those beans.
Right, and so the idea is to eat a small amount of beans every day, like one chickpea. You start small, or a tablespoon. Eat a tablespoon. So here's what I suggest. You get a can of beans, because the cans are the least offensive, because they've cooked the shit out of them. Excuse me.
Hey, what?
You eat a tablespoon of them, and see how you feel. If you're okay, great. Have another tablespoon the next day and do that for a week. The next week, go to 2 tablespoons.
Right.
See how you feel. If it's too much, go back to a tablespoon and really teach your body how to digest those foods.
I did it. It was great.
Then it works, and it's beneficial, because all the science out there says that people who eat lots of beans, they have lower risk of chronic disease, and they have great longevity.
Well, we ate a lot of vegetables yesterday. Well, we eat a lot of vegetables every day. Some of the vegetables that we ate contain beans, like tofu.
We had gorgeous grill marks. Gary's the king of grill marks.
And it was a lot of fun. The next couple of weeks, people are going to be out there barbecuing, hopefully not in Northern California, where the whole state apparently smells like one giant barbecue. Mm. And we were barbecuing indoors, and we went out to our terrace and had a great time. And we grilled some of these incredible little eggplants.
They're called fairy tale eggplants.
Fairy tale eggplant.
They're adorable.
And they were really lovely.
They were. How did you prepare them, Gary?
I just split them down the middle, put them on the cut side down on the grill first. And I put a little balsamic vinegar and, yes, a couple of eyedroppers of olive oil just so they wouldn't stick to the pan. I greased up the pan a little bit with some olive oil because that's the downside of a griddle pan is things stick to them if you don't grease them up a little bit. So I used a little tiny bit of olive oil, brushed the pan with it, let that kind of season the pan. And the other trick about a griddle pan, for those of you who enjoy cooking in 90 degree heat, enjoy indoor grilling during 90 degree heat with a high humidity, like me, I let the pan season and I let it heat up for quite a while, almost 10 minutes on a low heat, so it gets really hot, screaming hot. And then I just cut the little fairy tale eggplant down the middle, and then I brushed them with a little balsamic vinegar and just grilled them very simply like that. It was great. Didn't salt them, didn't pepper them. They were fine, right?
Yeah, they were so cute. And then we had zucchini, colorful bell peppers. You did basically the same thing with all of them, right?
Right.
Brushed with a little balsamic.
Brushed them with a little balsamic, a couple of eyedroppers of olive oil in there just to keep them from sticking. And the trick with tofu is that you just have to put it on the griddle and leave it there until it creates these grill marks. But what that does is that allows them to not stick. It's magic.
Yeah.
It's magic. Just leave them on long.
You have to be patient.
Yeah, you have to be patient. And you have to like the heat.
The onions. I think they were my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grilled, like caramelized onions. You had both yellow and red.
Yes.
And they are just so yummy, and you add them to everything and makes everything else yummy.
Right. And I did a lot of extra. And so now we have them in the refrigerator, and you can make sandwiches out of them or wraps or whatever it is you like to do. Put them in a lettuce leaf, put them in a tortilla, put them in between two pieces of bread. And then we made a vegan pesto, but I call it my vegan non-oil aioli. So basically, it's basil with fresh garlic, cashews, water, and nutritional yeast.
And you added a little kale.
And I did. Just to stretch the basil a little bit, and to make it a little greener, I added some kale.
Why not?
Raw kale.
It's so yummy.
Yeah, and you put that in the refrigerator and let it chill. It's like a vegan mayo.
We've talked a lot about pesto
this vegan
summer.
Aioli.
Because pesto is... it's just a wonderful thing, I think, to have, especially in the summer when you're growing basil outside.
And what that does is that kind of, you know, when Labor Day does come around, you're okay to go into fall and autumn or whatever you prefer to call that season that comes after summer. You're okay not to have any more grilled vegetables. You want to start now baking things and making ratatouilles and soups and
squash
chili and big pots of beans and things like that.
Those big squashes.
Right.
The curry squash.
Right.
Acorn and butternut.
Yeah, when the harvest starts to really come in and you start seeing pumpkins and squashes and you stuff them and bake them. So we wanted to get in our last couple of weeks of summer cooking, and yesterday was a big celebration day for that. And also in the celebration department, we are celebrating getting out on our bikes.
Yeah, we have not been on a bike ride for a long time. Well, I brought my bicycle to my mother's house.
Right, but as far as in the city of New York,
yes.
We were two New Yorkers riding our bikes down the streets of New York City, heading to a park, the Corona Park.
Flushing
Meadow Corona Park during coronavirus.
Yeah.
And it was very cool to do that. We had a good time. And hats off to you for actually riding your bike on the street.
Thank you. I have a lot of fear, folks, riding on the city streets because I don't trust any of the people in cars here in the city.
But we took the bike lanes and it was okay, right?
It was.
We had a good time. And the really cool thing was, or I guess it was kind of eerie, is we drove by the U.S. Open tennis tournament, which is now going on, and we heard the matches going on. And of course, no applause because there were no spectators in the stands. And that was kind of eerie.
It was. You could hear the ball.
Yeah, you could hear the ball and you could see the camera people shooting the matches and you could hear the umpire saying, love 30.
Yeah.
And you could see the scoreboard they were playing for themselves. And that's kind of like what we've done as far as the art. We've gone in and we've
discovered
the art in ourselves again during this time. And it's almost 6 months now where we've been under this shelter-in-place order, and it's slowly lifting in phases. A lot of folks have left New York, as I mentioned earlier, and a lot of folks are staying. So to the folks that are staying, right on.
So talking more about barbecuing, of course, people like burgers and stuff on the Barbie.
Burgers seem to be the big food of barbecuing. Burgers
and we
dogs.
Have so many recipes at Responsible Eating and Living, and many of them we make over and over, and then some we forget about.
Right.
And then we find out from a listener or a follower of our nonprofit Responsible Eating and Living, and they've made one of our recipes that we forgot about.
And what was the recipe that they made?
Our lentil burger recipe.
That's a great burger.
It's a great burger. And they told us it was like the best of the veggie burgers that they have made.
Our friends Jay and Vance in Northern California, who have had to evacuate, made, before the evacuation, made our lentil burger and said they loved it.
Right, which is exciting. So this lentil burger is made with lentils, brown lentils.
Right.
Wild rice, like either a red rice, a black rice, or a mix of rices. It could also be made with brown rice if you want. I'm always making variations, themes and variation, but some whole grain. And then it has some herbs and spices. We like putting beet powder in this to give it a little color. Onion powder, turmeric, garlic. We put summer savory in it because we were making it in the summer. And then it has raw almonds, ground flax seeds, onion, carrot, celery. And then...
It's a great burger.
It is. We also add a little miso in it, which is optional, but it gives it just another dimension of flavor, and some flour, which could be a gluten-free flour or wheat flour either. But it's a great burger.
It's a great burger. And the reason we wanted to add the beet powder and the red rice and things of that nature was because a lot of people want it to look like a flesh burger.
Yeah,
right?
Bloody flesh burger.
And this was before the Beyond Burger hit its peak in popularity. So we were making these in our kitchen at Responsible Eating and Living because we believe in the bean burgers, again with the beans. But like when we go to a restaurant that specializes in plant-based burgers, we always like to get the bean burger as opposed to the Beyond Burger or the Impossible Burger because they're tastier and they're better for you and they're whole foods that go to work immediately. They're not something that you feel in your gut. And that's the thing. I mean, some of these folks who say they can't handle beans in their gut because it gives them pain. Whenever I eat a Beyond Burger, it gives me this incredible pain. It's like it's hit my stomach and it gives me terrible gas. So I think if you do what Karen said and just, you know, start with a 1 tablespoon or 1 bean a day, you can get your gut back to reviving itself and putting some good bugs in there and it'll go to work like it's supposed to because these strange exotic things that they're putting in these plant-based burgers now are wreaking havoc on your gut in other ways.
I'm glad you brought that up. I remember, now I've been vegan for 32 years and vegetarian for longer. I stopped eating meat at 15 years old. But before that, I used to get Big Mac burgers at McDonald's.
Sure.
It took a while to connect the dots, but I would eat a Big Mac and then feel sick.
Yeah.
And then go on with my day. And then I would eat another Big Mac at another time and then feel sick.
And the Big Mac wasn't just the only thing you ate. You ate the fries and you ate the shake.
Probably. And now I'm thinking there are processed foods and some of them may be plant-based. But what they contain are these isolates.
Right.
So soy isolate, and now there's pea protein isolate, which we think might be healthier than soy protein isolate, but who knows? We just don't have enough research. So I'm really wary of these highly processed foods. Another one is whey protein isolate. Whey.
W-H-E-Y.
W-H-E-Y. Little Miss Muffet sat in her tuffet eating her curds and whey.
And that's found in a lot of protein powders.
Protein power. So I'm bringing it back.
Again with the protein.
Again with the protein. And I see a lot of posts on social media where people ask, in a lot of vegan circles, what kind of protein powder should I get? What do you recommend? And my response always is, why?
Yeah.
Why do you think you need protein powder? Do you use a protein powder? Again, I'm asking you out there. Do you? Why?
You know, because they don't feel they're getting enough protein.
And then the question is why? Because you're tired? Because you don't have enough energy? Okay.
Because they want to bulk up maybe when they work out. They want their muscles to get bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger's.
Yeah. So my point is we don't need protein powder. There may be some people who have very serious health conditions and are not able to get enough food and calories and protein, and maybe a smoothie with some protein powder may help them in a short period of time. But for the most of us, a whole food plant diet will give you all the protein you need. Even if you're a super athlete, you just need to consume more calories. You're just chewing more.
Yeah, I mean, we're really, you know, we're making a desperate cry to all of you out there if you have any doubts about the benefits of this lifestyle. It's all a win-win. You're not only improving your own health, you're improving the health of the planet, and obviously you're improving the health of the animals who are bred for life on a factory farm, which is a death sentence. I don't even know why we're even having this discussion anymore, but we still have to have it, and we'll still keep having it until we're long, well, hopefully, until we're long gone, these podcasts will still be available online somewhere.
Well, I bring it up because I see my friends posting different products that they're using that they're excited about. And then I go and look at them and I read the label.
Because you care about your friends and you don't want them to get sicker.
Yeah, so I'm talking about whey. Whey. W-H-E-Y. And whey is the liquid that remains after milk has been curdled and strained. It's a byproduct of making cheese, and it has many commercial uses. So some people got smart, because whey is a waste product when making cheese. And they found things to put it in and sell to people and market it like it's something we need.
Sure.
But we don't need it.
No.
And it's not healthy. One of the things that whey has that we don't want in it, IGF-1.
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 It doesn't even sound, I mean, it sounds terrible. What is in IGF-1?
IGF-1 is insulin-like growth factor. And it's really important. It's especially important for children because it's a growth promoter. And we want our children to grow into healthy adults. But later in life, it can promote the aging process. Not so good.
Not so good.
But it's important in muscle growth, for example. What happens is when we consume protein, especially animal protein, but it could also be these isolated soy proteins, for example, which are very similar to animal protein, the body will increase its production of IGF-1.
Oh, that's not good.
And IGF-1 has been found to be linked to cancer. It can affect calcium stores, kidney function, bone health, all kinds of things.
So why would you want to have more of that if your body already
Exactly. Why do you want
it?
To have protein powder
that's going
in
to
a
give...
shake? And I really am against whey protein because it's from dairy and there's all kinds of associated problems with growing cows to create milk and cheese and whey, which is dangerous to the environment, it's cruel to the animals, but it's not good for us.
No.
But also, I'm also concerned about soy-isolated protein.
Right.
And
that's what's in a lot of these.
in these protein powders.
And these burgers that we're talking
about. And, yeah, let's bring it back. Because
so you know what's good in a shake? If you want to put protein powder in a shake, you know what you should put in a shake?
Beans.
Beans.
Beans, right.
Beans. Yep, right? That exactly. might be a great way to eat your beans.
Yes.
Put that tablespoon of beans inside your smoothie.
Right. It'll thicken it a little bit.
Thicken it a little bit. Gets you some natural goodness.
Absolutely.
Yeah. See how this show all ties together with what we talk about all the time.
The thing about beans that we're discovering is you can put them in anything.
Yeah.
I've yet to make bean brownies, but
I mean, but what is the greatest bean thing that you can think of right now? I'll answer my own question. Hummus.
Yeah. What a great thing.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, that's just kids love it. Adults love it. Most people love hummus.
Okay, but please make it yourself and don't buy those crummy hummuses out there that have soy oils and are not organic.
Right.
And have preservatives in them. Just make it and eat it.
It's so easy to make, and we have a lot of great recipes. And it'll turn you on to something that I had not known about until I became a vegan about how many years ago?
A long time ago, Gary.
About 14 years ago now. And that is tahini. Oh, my goodness. I don't know how I lived without tahini. I don't know how I lived without falafel. I don't know how I lived without tahini and falafel and hummus. I didn't start eating hummus till I turned vegan. Wow. I was missing out. Great stuff.
What's heartbreaking to me is some of our friends and family and colleagues who want to lose weight. They want to get healthy. And they still want to enjoy some of the products they love. And what happens is they go towards these manufactured foods, the stuff in boxes that may be, I mean, it depends on the decade. Could be low fat, could be low carb, could be low this and that. But to make the product do what they want to do, it has to have some sort of industrial ingredients, which are not good for us. So, for example, there's a company called Devotion Nutrition, and they're making a lot of these whey protein isolate products. So they have something called Buttery Blend, and you can make donuts with it and bagels with it. And I just ask you, read the ingredients, please. This one product, whey protein isolate, micellar casein, medium chain triglyceride powder, fiber blend, which is cellulose, carrageenan, and xanthan gum. Why? Well, you get fiber in plant foods. You don't need some cellulose in your food. And then there's natural and artificial flavors.
Right.
That should be a big red flag. Natural flavors, folks, are not natural. We've talked about this on this show. Just type it up. FDA, natural flavors. You can read about it. It's scary what they approve. And then artificial flavors. Okay, we know they're artificial. And they're even worse. And then there's one more thing in here. Something called digestive enzymes. And so a lot of paleo people take digestive enzymes. And the thing is, we don't need to take digestive enzymes if we're eating a healthy whole food plant diet. Our body has all the digestive enzymes we need. But maybe we're not feeling too good when we're on one of these high animal paleo kind of diets. And digestive enzymes make us feel better because we're not eating the right things.
It all comes back to that. You had me at casein. I wouldn't buy any product that had casein in it, nor would I buy a product with whey. So I just want to say no whey to whey.
Thank you. No whey to whey.
No way to whey.
While we're on the subject of dairy products,
yes,
I just want to give a big congratulatory shout out to Miyoko's.
Miyoko! Woo!
The Miyoko company has been fighting with the state of California, which came after her company for using the word butter.
Right.
On her vegan butter products.
Right.
And she just posted this a day or so ago. I want to read it. Victory! Our use of the word butter has been deemed to merit First Amendment protection, according to the United States District Court, Northern District of California, in their ruling of our motion for preliminary injunction. The ruling states that we can also use the terms cruelty-free and lactose-free, although not hormone-free or revolutionizing dairy with plants.
Wow, congratulations.
Yes, so they can say it's cruelty-free. They can't say revolutionizing dairy with plants, but okay, that's a fine compromise.
And congratulations to Miyoko and all of her people out there in California. I hope they are safe.
Vegan butter.
We can say it.
We can eat it. We can buy it.
And we make vegan butter on occasion for special occasions,
right? We do.
We make it, and we found the recipe in Miyoko's pantry cookbook.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, while we're on the subject of hormones, did you know, Karen, that a study finds vegan men don't have lower testosterone levels than meat eaters?
What?
This was an August 24th, 2020 study. A new study could dispel the stereotype that real men eat meat, as the findings revealed no difference between the testosterone levels of the vegans and meat eaters. There is a misconception out there, held by many, that eating meat is manly and swapping sausages for soy will lead to a drop in testosterone, a myth that dissuades many men from going vegan. Well, I could read on, but why? You could just Google it and find it on all the top veg sites, but I think that's a pretty awesome study. While we're on the subject of hormones, I know that since I've gone vegan, I have absolutely had no drop in my manliness.
You get manlier every day.
Exactly. Yep. What I'm trying to say is, if anything, eating meat kind of shuts down the manliness. The Game Changers.
They showed us that.
Showed us that. As did What the Health, as did all of these other films that turned so many people on to going vegan. And turned so many people on to going vegan because the turn-on was a lot better than when you were eating meat. And I'm talking about the sexual turn-on. Okay. But some of these studies are really, you know, you have to dig deep, as you say, and you have to... And these are all backed by science.
Backed by science.
Yeah.
And we have to be careful about science. We always like to say that scientific studies should be peer-reviewed. But there's a weakening in the peer-review system, unfortunately, because scientists and periodicals can be bought.
Another thing about the testosterone level, before I leave it, is the bottom line is whilst the Miami University study found no difference in the hormone levels of meat eaters and vegans, an earlier study published in 2000 showed that men eating a whole food plant-based diet actually saw their testosterone levels enhanced.
Ooh! And I want to say that I'm hopeful that it's good testosterone. I want to think that vegan testosterone is better than omnivore, carnivore testosterone.
Absolutely.
There's like a more peaceful element to it.
Absolutely.
It's not this violent,
bullying testosterone. It's true. All of that you just said is very true.
Now, I don't know how that is.
There's a whole wave of calm that comes over you. I mean, I'm not kidding. And you know me, I was almost 300 pounds. And, you know, I've lost a lot of weight, 100 pounds.
And you keep melting.
And when you're that overweight, you're also just angry all the time. Or at least I was. Mm-hmm. This has nothing to do with fat shaming or anything. Although I have been fat shamed in my life. Hold no malice to those who have fat shamed me. But what I can tell you is there's this whole feeling of calmness that comes over you as soon as you eat your first plant-based meal and never go back to eating a meat meal again or a flesh meal. And, you know, there's some detoxing that goes on, but really, just give it a try. Do the 30-day. I mean, a lot of these people have these 30-day plant-based challenges and things. Take the challenge. Do them. If you want me to put you on a diet, I will. It's real easy. Just cut out all the dairy and all the animal products in your life and eat whatever you want from that point on. Now, a lot of people will say, that's wrong. There's a lot of junk food out there. I'm saying that's how you start. Then you keep listening to this show to find out about Bean Burgers and things like that as opposed to Beyond Burgers. But hey, if Beyond Burgers help you get off the animal, then I am all for that. Go ahead and eat the Beyond Burger. Watch what happens. It's better than eating meat. Trust me. Because again, it's a win-win. You're helping your health, you're helping the environment, and you're helping the animals.
I trust you.
Yeah. And you know, I felt like peanut butter was bad, but I was okay eating chicken wings. It's just, it's absurd because it's all about these studies that Karen is talking to you about right now on this program. They're just in defense of eating meat. So they're going to badmouth all of the things that are good for you if they have to do with reducing the meat in your life, because there's big money backing these industries.
It's frustrating too, because it takes so long to get good information out to a majority of people. It takes a long time. I've read like 17 years, but I think it's longer sometimes because there are some things that continue to be promoted that are just false. I see this all the time. So what do? We just keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah. No animal needs to die for me to live.
I wanted to put a question out to folks. If you've made any of our recipes and you like them, we would like to know. This would be a tremendous gift. We like to know that you like some of the work that we do. But flip side, if you've made a recipe of ours and it didn't work out,
yeah,
we also want to know.
Right.
And that helps us. And there may be something that you're doing that wasn't in the recipe that you may not realize you're doing. We could make the recipe more clear. There's just a great learning experience that could happen on both ends.
You're helping us if you make the recipe and tell us it's not working. So don't think that it will offend us, because it won't. We'll just go back and spend time figuring out why it didn't work for you and put it back on the site.
For example, we talk a lot about waffles and pancakes.
Right.
And we make a lot of waffles and we make a lot of pancakes. And I know that there are some people that are challenged making pancakes and waffles.
Right.
And maybe you're going from making a wheat egg-based pancake to something gluten-free or something vegan, and it doesn't respond the same way that you're used to.
Right.
There is a certain amount of practice and skill, I think, that's required. Also having the right tools.
And you know, maybe one of the things I found about making, switching from wheat products like pancakes and waffles to gluten-free products was that you have to cook the gluten-free product a lot longer. And a lot of people are used to just throwing the pancake batter on the griddle, and then when they see the bubbles, they flip it. We found that it takes a little longer than that. The batters are a little more finicky.
Right. So they don't have that egg protein that solidifies very quickly.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people think that what we do at Responsible Eating and Living is great work. And then there are those that think what we do here is just ridiculous because we spend so much time doing it. And, you know, we know that you have full and active lives, you're raising families, you're busy, and you're looking for that 30-minute meal. So I'm always timing myself when I make a dinner in the kitchen now. It takes me, for the most part, about 30 minutes to make a full-blown meal from top to bottom, unless I'm grilling indoors. And then I need a bigger grill in order for it to take longer. But the main bulk of the time is in the prep work. And then once you put it on the grill or you stick it in the oven, you know, I consider that the watch is stopped. So it takes about 30 minutes for me from top to bottom to get everything ready to go and thrown in the oven or put in the pot. And sometimes for the complete meal, most of the time, it's just about 30 minutes.
But part of that is your skill, because you know how to cut and chop efficiently.
Right, right.
And for people that are just starting out, that is difficult to do. You know, we were watching that film. What was it called? The Elephant and the Butterfly?
Oh, great film.
It's a film. It's in French. It's from Belgium.
Right.
It was really a lovely story. But there's a scene where the dad who has a 5-year-old daughter, but she doesn't know that he's her dad.
Anyway,
it's one of those stories.
Don't want to give it away. But he's showing her how to use a French. He's showing her how to use a chef's knife. It's really beautiful.
So you can teach a 5-year-old how to use a chef's knife. Now, a chef's knife can be dangerous. It's a weapon.
Yeah.
You have to know how to hold it
right
and use it properly.
Right. So a lot of this that we're talking about with prepping of food and the whole discussion of, you know, wanting to go to a restaurant to get your meals and braving the coronavirus to do so, as opposed to those who are staying home and cooking all their meals like Karen and I. Yes, it's part of our work. It's part of responsibility and living to keep bringing recipes to you good people out there. But it's also by choice that we're now saying we're not going to go to a restaurant for a while. Now, we have a lot of friends who are out there slugging it out, who own restaurants, and we love them and we wish them all the best. But they're in Manhattan and we're in Forest Hills. And so it's only a short train ride away, but I haven't been to Manhattan in almost 6 months. And when I do go back to Manhattan, the first place I'll stop in at is the Organic Grill and Flying Marty's and the New Blossom, you know, all of our favorite places. But until then, I'm going to stay home and cook my meals. It's a great time to learn how to cook.
Yeah.
If you don't know how. And it's a great time to learn that you don't need to open up a box in order to serve a meal for your family. Use all of those foods that have been, well, I guess, refined. What do you call a food product that has been broken down into just like
powder?
Processed.
Yeah.
That has been processed to
refined. Yeah.
Yeah. I say, get back to getting rustic and eat some rustic food like beans. Put them in your smoothies.
Okay, I got a tip that I want to share.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've shared this before. I think I have, but it's worth repeating. When you cook vegetables, potatoes, corn in water, like you're steaming them, you're boiling them, and then you get the corn, the vegetables, the potatoes, they're done. What do you do with the water that's left over? That's where a lot of the vitamins are.
Right.
So you can do a number of things. You can cool it down and just drink it.
Right.
I do that with steamed greens.
Right. She does.
Gary doesn't drink the water. I do. I want it. I want those vitamins.
She does. She drinks the water. She makes kale tea afterwards.
But water that you've cooked potatoes in, sweet potatoes, corn, makes a wonderful vegetable broth for cooking grains.
Right.
So let's say you make sweet potatoes or potatoes one day, and the next day you make millet or rice or quinoa. Cook it in that water.
Right.
Oh, my. It just gives it such a delicate, lovely flavor.
Sweet potato water is really fun to cook in. Make sure you scrub your sweet potatoes very clean.
Yeah, we're talking about...
Only use organics.
Organic.
When you're doing this, we're talking about organic, not the conventional produce, which has a lot of pesticides and herbicides, but the organic stuff. Yeah, we're using that a lot now to cook our rice. And sweet potato water for cooking rice. And
it's lovely. I was talking to Chef Ramses Bravo about a month ago, and he always recommends cooking grains in vegetable broth because it adds so much more flavor, especially if you're not using salt, and we don't like salt. Well, we don't like cooking in salt. You like salt, but maybe...
I do like salt, and it's a tough habit to break, and that's another thing I would say. If you are trying to think about transitioning to a plant-based diet, and don't try to give everything else up at the same time. So you're going to probably want a little salt in your life. At first, it's okay, but I've cut way back on the salt.
Yes, you have.
And every time we say we put a little miso in some of our sauces and some of our cooking, it's because I want that hit of salt again, and I'm doing it the best way I can. But it's still salt. I mean, salt is salt.
Right. So Chef Bravo uses vegetable broth, and there are many salt-free vegetable broths you can use to cook your grains, but... just use your sweet potato water, your potato water.
Right. Yesterday's meal was made without salt, except for the thing that I left out as the sauce, and that had the little bit of miso in it, which was the basil aioli without oil.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was great.
Okay.
So it's like one of our last barbecue meals before we head into autumn, and we're very excited about that. Labor Day is coming up, the Labor Day weekend. You might want to watch our video on how to barbecue if you're going to a park, and or if you're going to fire up the family barbecue and you're deciding that maybe you don't want to cook any meat. So that would be great. Look at how much fun you could have with lentil burgers and grilled vegetables.
The key is you want a good burger, but you also want to have good fixings. The caramelized onions, mushrooms if you like them. I do.
Right.
And then a really gooey kind of sauce. We have like a chipotle mayonnaise. You can buy them or you can make them.
Right. You can cut the salt or you can put it in. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to eat this way. And you, the shame and the guilt, maybe some of you don't even care, but some of you do, I know. In the back of your mind, you're saying to yourself as you bite into that thick, juicy cow flesh that, you know, you might feel a little guilty. And that all goes away. Trust me, it's great. And I call it making peace with my food.
And, oh, I love that. Making peace with your food.
Yeah, I finally made peace with my food.
I think that's a great way to wrap up this program. I'm Karen Hartglass, and I'm with Gary DeMattei, and we have made peace with our food, and we want you...
I would go to Peace Food, too, when I went back to Manhattan.
Oh, we would go to Peace Food, yeah. Yes.
That's a great restaurant.
Oh, someday.
Yeah. We'll head back to Manhattan on our bikes.
I want to do that.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah, I want to walk. I want to ride our bikes to Manhattan. That's the next thing I want to do.
Okay.
All right, we'll report back with all of you. Have a great week.
And have a delicious week.